Men Calling On Demand is made possible by Welsh & Forbes, working with clients to manage the full range of events that come with building wealth, from investments to trustee services. More at welshforbes.com. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, strengthening Maine's coastal and island communities through education, health, and support. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
Today on Maine Calling, finding hope when times are bleak. The use of the word hope is commonplace, and it can sound a bit trite. Here's hoping. Hope springs eternal. Don't give up hope. But beyond that is a valuable concept. Hope is what gives people the ability to get through adversity, serious illness, depression, war, loss of loved ones. I'm Cindy Hahn. In the season of Thanksgiving, we talk about the role of hope during difficult times. There's a lot going on in our world that might cause feelings of hopelessness. So today, we ask you, our listeners, to tell us, what gives you hope? We hope that by simply having this conversation, some of you will come out of it feeling a shift in outlook and an appreciation for those bright spots in our lives. Maine Calling is coming right up. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. Hope comes naturally to human beings. Sometimes it's simple. You hope to see your friends soon, or you hope for a good night's sleep. But sometimes it's more serious. Hope that the cancer is gone. Hope to survive during war or danger. Today we'll find out why having a sense of hope matters, especially during difficult times. And we want to hear from you. Tell us, what gives you hope? My guests are the Reverend Dr. Brittany Longsdorf. She's a lecturer in humanities and multi-faith chaplain at Bates College. The Reverend Kenneth Lewis, senior pastor at Green Memorial AME Zion Church. And Tom Muser, clinical psychologist and applied gerontologist and professor and director of the Center for Excellence in Aging and Health at the University of New England. We invite you to join the conversation. Tell us what makes you feel hopeful. Email talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on social media, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Reverend Lewis, there is a lot of bad news out there, as we all know. There's shootings and climate change and Ukraine and inflation and, of course, the pandemic. What do you see as the role of hope in the face of times like this?
I think in times like this, Cindy, hope springs eternal, right? I mean, so there's so much new, so much external stimuli that can cause stress and strain in the lives of people. Finding a sense of inner peace, of hopefulness, creates the necessary balance. I tend to come from a faith perspective, and there are times where just a glance, a look, a simple word can help someone get through the day, get through the evening. And so being hopeful, full of hope, I think creates the counterweight, the counterbalance to all the external, I don't want to call it noise because it's more than noise, all the external stresses and strains that tends to create internal conflict and strain. And so I think hope is an absolute necessity in this day and age. And I'm grateful that, you know, I can look around and still be hopeful about the rest of this day and tomorrow.
Brittany, Reverend Longsdorf, can you just follow up on what Reverend Lewis just said? We talked about hope with you earlier this year on Maine Calling, and you explained how it's part of the equation when you work with college students. So update us on what you're seeing among the young people when there is so much bad news, especially the shootings at schools and campuses. Are you seeing a lot of students just feeling despondent and hopeless?
I think I am seeing students who are naming their despair and their grief more readily. I've actually seen just in the last 6 months, much more claims of grief, and calling things grief. And I'm really grateful for that. I think there was a time earlier in the pandemic when we were all seeing such mass grief and trauma on such a huge level that we didn't pause and stop to feel the sorrow of it. And I think the feeling of grief is really connected to allowing yourself also to feel hope. They're so interconnected. And so I'm definitely seeing more of that. And I think it's a good thing, even though it's a hard thing. And with hope in college students, I'm seeing a deep, deep connection to imagination. And I'm kind of honoring and exploring that with creativity and different things. But this idea that hope is sort of imagination with grit, you know, it's this idea of visioning a world that doesn't exist yet. And not only visioning it, but believing you get to contribute to its evolution. That it's this beautiful creative moment of seeing something you don't see in the world right now and working towards it is a hope is a motivator. Hope is this imagination that has grit and has tasks attached to it, I think has been kind of a shift I've been seeing in the hope rhetoric and grief rhetoric that we're seeing with college students these days.
That's so interesting. So the idea that if you can build it in your mind, then it can happen, the imagination part.
Yeah,
And you
and that you can work towards like hope doesn't have to be passive, I think, or not allowing hope to be simply passive. Exactly.
Yeah, Dr. Muser, you as a psychologist, you study how hope affects people. So tell us how you study the role that hope plays in health and well-being, and also what you found.
Sure. So I have a longitudinal study with older adults in Maine and elsewhere, where we're looking at broad indicators of wellness and well-being, as well as more basic factors in health and the disease avoidance. And we're finding that hope is correlated with just about every other positive indicator, and actually correlated with the number of negative in the ways you might expect. So persons who report a higher hope, at least older adults in my sample, are also reporting a greater sense of wellness, a greater sense of comfort with themselves as a person or people, less depression, less anxiety, a better sense of their own future health. So I think future orientation, which Brittany was just talking about, is an important part of the hope experience. Charles Snyder, who's a researcher who's studied hope for many years, defines hope as a positive motivational state defined by two distinct components. One is agency or efficacy. It's a belief that I can make a difference in a future self or time. And the other is a perception of pathways to make things better. And I think where trauma gets in the way of hope is in that looking further out. So there's a researcher at the University of Oklahoma who speaks about how trauma reduces our capacity to hope long term because the immediates present a greater sense of threat. And so I think as we build hope in people, we want to help in them and empower them to see that further out future that they hopefully can perceive
Hopefully.
positive.
Well,
Yeah.
so let me ask a follow-up question, Ken, and then I'll get to you. I'm just interested in what you're saying about the action part of it, that seems to be essential to differentiating hope from just plain old optimism. They're not the same thing. Optimism is just a general sunny outlook, right? But does
Yeah.
hope, is there such a thing as passive hope for things to get better?
Well, and I think so. Chan Hellman is the researcher at Oklahoma that studies this, and he makes a distinction between a wish, and a wish, I think, is the more of the passive hope. And he says hope is active. He also says hope could be taught, which I think is also kind of exciting because that provides then opportunities for intervention.
Ken, go ahead.
So, Tom was resonating with me in a major way. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, and there's evidence of things not seen. Again, my context, it's active. It is, in some instances, aggressive. How can I aggressively deal with the trauma that I'm encountering so that I can use that experience as a stair step to something called better? And I think that requires a certain amount of support. right? And so I'm not in this all by myself. I have those who love and care for me. And sometimes I have to get out of my own way and out of my own head. But I have to experience kind of the hurt, if you will. And what am I learning from that in order to get me to the next place? And so I really like the idea about I'm not wishing something upon somebody else. I'm not even wishing on behalf of myself. I'm actively participating and getting me to a better place. And I'm being responsive to the environment, but I'm also being active. In some instances, I'm being aggressive because I want it so bad.
So Reverend Lewis, if as a faith leader, if you have someone coming to you with just feeling hopeless or feeling just they don't know which way to turn, Tom said that you can teach hope. Can you give us an example? I don't know if you can search for a good example of how you would do that for somebody.
Yeah, I mean, in teaching hope, first of all, begins with empathy, right? So I have to spend enough time listening. And I mean active listening or radical listening so that I can feel and experience a little bit of what the person is going through and then find strategies. I identify those areas where the person is hopeful. Maybe they just don't know it yet. In their language, you'll hear hope statements. And I don't know if there's something called a hope statement, but I can hear it. And then try to magnify that. You can't wipe away all of the trauma right away or all of the difficulty. But if you just can get a little bit of that hope statement and begin to magnify it, I think people begin to see what they've not been able to see before. I do that with young people, elders, those who have lost jobs, lost family members, who are just confused about where they want to go in life. And a feeling, you know, not very hopeful about tomorrow. But in there, you can hear that they want to get through it. And sometimes they need permission. And by helping them say, you have permission to be hopeful, is kind of how that works.
Huh. And Brittany, you have similar experiences with the folks that you talk with.
Yeah, just hearing us talk about how you can teach hope reminds me of a dear friend of mine, Sarah, who's actually a hospice chaplain, who talks a lot about borrowing people's hope, that you can borrow hope from others. If you're in a particularly heavy or blue place and there's someone in your circle, in your family, in your life who is more hopeful and has more of that energy and drive to actively push forward to a better moment, a better future, that you can kind of lean into their energy and borrow their hope. I think it's almost a fake it till you make it strategy until you too yourself start to absorb and feel that earnest hopefulness as well. And so I think there's all these different beautiful ways that we can translate and share hope with one another by teaching and borrowing and just being together in a hopeful space and being open with that empathy that you're talking about, Ken, that allows us to kind of transmit hope in these different ways.
Tom, I wanted to ask you if hope can be harmful in any way. I know that with my kids when they were little, I wouldn't promise we were going to do X, Y, or Z because I didn't want them to be disappointed if it didn't happen. And so, and doctors do this too, right? They don't necessarily give people what they think might be false hope, and because people, again, right, their hopes would be shattered. So, can you talk about that, or the sort of the downside of hope?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of strange in this conversation to flip this and to think about the anti-hope. But, you know, everything in life has, I think, its opposite state in some ways. And if hope is a real powerful belief that things can be different or better, and the definitions of hope emphasize the positive. I suppose you could also hope for the negative. You hope something doesn't happen. I think being in a hopeful state about a future, even if it's not possible, has the potential for good. I think about somebody who may be in a dire situation facing a terminal illness, who objectively, from a scientific perspective, may have little potential for future life. And yet that person hopes for something and they remain active and living because of that hope. I think there's a lot of, and maybe this is where spirituality and faith and God comes in, that can drive us past ourselves into a future that we desire, even if other things are holding us back.
Ken, that seems like a natural segue to you, the spiritual aspect that hope and faith are really very similar.
Yeah, I think there's a, you know, a very strong connection to that. Empirical data, there's information, there's lots of data available that says, I'm not going to make it. But something way inside says, despite that, I'm still going to look forward to making it day by day, even if that's minute by minute. You know, to take a personal opportunity, my mother's was a 16-year breast cancer survivor.
Oh.
She died at the age of 53 in 1995. She was always hopeful. She never threw the towel in. And I was able to watch this and talk with her and walk with her. And in that process, she lent other people hope. Something on the inside was working on the outside that brought about a change in her life, but not just her life, but in other folks' lives. And so, you know, I really think that when faith or belief or becomes one's strength, you can look beyond kind of the evidence, if you will. Look beyond the diagnosis. Look beyond the inevitable outcome and live your best life every day.
It seems like it almost could be a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? If you're hopeful and, I mean, not like you could cure breast cancer, but you actually could have a better quality of life.
Absolutely.
Right. Brittany, do you consider yourself a hopeful person?
I do. And just thank you for sharing that story, Ken. That's so beautiful. Knowing that part of your life and the way your mother's life affected so many. And it reminds me that we're coming into, in Christian traditions, into Advent season starting this Sunday. And the first Sunday of Advent is hope. Yeah, which is, you know, as when we're coming close to solstice, this darkest point in the year where things can feel heavy and long and dark. Many Christians stop and light a candle and talk about hope and waiting for something new to come into the world that will help and show the world how to love. And what a powerful seasonal thing that is for us to think about, whether you're Christian or not, about taking these long and dark nights and lighting a candle and thinking about hope and the way it can manifest in your lives. And I think just spending time contemplating that and setting space apart for that leads you to be a little bit more hopeful person. And there's such simple things you can do to be in a more hopeful state, in that borrowing hope and teaching hope, but even just preparing for this main calling that we got the prompt, what gives you hope? And so I made a list in a Google Doc and it's now 3 pages long. And it's such a good practice for me to think about all of these small joys in my life that are rerouting me to my purpose and my vision and what helps me get by minute and day by day when things are hard, all these things that are worth hoping for. And that's something anyone could do, make a what gives you hope Google Doc, you know, and manifest that in yourself.
Well, Brittany, we'll have to hear what's on your list a little bit after the break. And also from our listeners, let us know what gives you hope. We're just going to take a quick break. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. Today we are talking about hope, why hope matters when times are tough, and what it means to be hopeful. And we want to hear from you. Tell us what gives you hope. Joining me, Reverend Kenneth Lewis. He is a senior pastor at Green Memorial AME Zion Church. Dr. Tom Muser is a clinical psychologist and applied gerontologist with the UNE Center for Excellence in Aging and Health. and Reverend Brittany Longsdorf is a multi-faith chaplain at Bates College. Share your comments and questions. Email talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. And I'm going to read this email from Wendy. She says, I find so much news of our world discouraging. I have to limit the amount of daily news intake. The biggest candle of hope in my life is the younger generations. In my family, we have young adults working on city water projects, non-GMO certification, installing solar projects on top of old coal mines, great school admin staff, and overall, they see fewer barriers to other humans than my generation has. Brittany, I'm going to ask you to weigh in again on the young people. I think so many of us turn to them in a way for inspiration. Maybe we're all jaded and they're not. Talk about them as models.
They are beautiful models for me as well. They are fierce in their hope and willing to do the work and try risky things to see change, which I admire so much. Wendy, your email reminds me of a conversation I was having with a college student last week. We were talking about environmental despair and, you know, climate crisis and climate change and how seeing constant reports of floods and fires is really, you know, creating such despair about the earth. And then this young adult said, but you know, there's these moments where I feel called to go to the ocean or the woods. Like I just need to see the oceans and the woods. And I was like, oh yeah, me too. And like, I think many of us have these moments where we feel like I just need to get outside. I need to go for a walk. And she's like, the earth is calling us back to it, you know? And like, there's this beautiful relationship happening and it's worth fighting for. And I just think these simple awarenesses are so beautiful and it motivates them. And it's what makes them such beautiful examples for us on how to continually cultivate hope in a time that can be really complex. They allow these small joys, these small kind of tugs of the heart to really mean something and to name that the universe is mysterious and that these things are calling to us and we need to act on them. And so I really admire that. And thank you for that email. It reminds me of that conversation.
And Tom, you actually work with students who work with older adults. So you're bringing the older and younger folks together.
Yeah, I think intergenerational conversations are really critical for building hope and also for teaching hope. If you think about an older person, maybe somebody in his or her 80s, what they've witnessed over their lifetime. And, you know, for good or bad, what goes around comes around. And we tend to have this revolving repetition in our history. And so I think having a historical perspective sometimes can be really helpful for building hope, because even though things may seem dire and black or dark now and there's no hope, there's light. In knowing that at past times, things have been better. I teach students how to do interviews with older adults around wellness, but also on broader beliefs about valuing and mattering in life. And I tell them it's essential to ask about future hopes. Even if you're talking to somebody on their deathbed, we all have a future. And to not ask about hopes for the future takes away an important part of wellness, I think.
That's a great lesson. Thank you. Let's go to Ellery calling from Waterville. Hi, Ellery.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call. What a great conversation. I've got two words I'd like to contribute. One is attitude, and the other one is activity. Having a positive attitude, I mean, there's tremendous positivity and negativity out there, but having the right attitude among that, and then taking an active part. If someone has a disease, if you sort of learn about it, if you see a problem, donate to Ukraine or whatever you see as a problem, be active in it. And I found that that is a good cause for hope. And when I've talked to people about that, and I was wondering what the panel thinks about those combination of those two words of attitude and activity.
Reverend Lewis, that keeps coming up.
Yeah, I mean, you hit it right on the nail on the head. I mean, If I have the right attitude, and I stay active, it's so very important. I don't have to carry everything I hear. I can choose, and that's about having agency, right? And so I have to have a bit of a self-preserving attitude, and then I need to stay busy. You know, I just don't want to sit on the sofa and just mull all of the mess in the milieu that's going on around me. I got to get out the house. I have to take a walk. I have to spend time with my loved ones. I need to see the world through other people's eyes. A child, a senior, this is multi-generational opportunity and activities. I think attitude is huge. And I want to thank the caller for bringing up the attitude and activity. I'm going to use that at some point in a sermon, I think.
There, Hillary, you've influenced our Reverend Lewis here. Attitude and activity. Thank you so much. And Reverend Lewis, you said something about self-preservation. And Tom, I wanted to circle back in sort of defining hope that really probably from the, you know, caveman days, the very primal thing that hope was necessary, right, for people to just survive if you didn't hope for something that and just gave up. So is it sort of wired into us to be hopeful?
I think those of us who survive and thrive have to find ways to be hopeful. That hope is kind of a root drive in humans. I imagine anthropologists would might define it a little bit differently than psychologists would. But you know, we in the caller's comments and Reverend Lewis's response, there is this duality. There's a belief in self, that concept of agency, and then there's that sense that I can do it, that you see the ability to take the action. And we've had to do that from the beginnings of time. Early on, it was, how do I feed myself and keep myself warm and sheltered? And now it's huge geopolitical issues that can seem overwhelming. And yet I really love the caller's example of making a donation, changing the narrative, at least for himself, around this bigger thing to make a difference. So I think hope is also about changing a narrative for yourself in ways that provides a sense of a future that you would like to see.
Okay, let's go to Andre. Andre, you're calling from Brunswick. Hi, go ahead.
Hi, it's Andre.
Andre,
I was just wondering if your panelists could comment on hope that's not outcomes based. I don't know if that's possible outside of a sort of faith framework, but I feel like that's something that I would love to hear what they have to say about. Thank you.
Oh, that's an interesting question. Thank you. Brittany, go ahead. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I love that question. And I think hope doesn't have to be outcomes-based. I think hope in some ways is really attached to living with mystery, to not having answers and allowing there to be spaces in your life when you're not in control and don't know the future, and that holding hope is not really hoping for something specific in the future or working towards a particular outcome in the future, but just being yourself in a space of mystery and being comfortable with yourself and holding on to relationships and knowing that you are kind of held in the moment, whether you're a person of faith or not. I think that is a really beautiful way to hold hope for yourself without a particular outcome in mind. It's sort of a way of being aware of what you have control of and what you don't, and still choosing to live everyday life, I think is a really beautiful way of holding hope without hope for a particular outcome.
This brings me back to the list you said you made, Brittany. What any highlight from your Google Doc that you can share with us as far as what gives you hope?
I was just scanning it. You know, it's funny. There are things, you know, that for me are like my children who are 3 and 4 who just find so much magic in the world, snuck out in the early morning a few days ago to see the first snow of the year in the backyard in just their pajamas and shoes, you know, and that just gives me so much hope to like really small things like the fact that I, after 30 years of killing plants, I've kept an office plant alive on my desk this whole year that I can grow and change and learn new things and take care of something I didn't know how to take care of before. It's such a small thing. And then these, like, you know, pictures of the earth from space and reminding us of our true size, of the way we find each other in our grief and are sharing grief more openly these days. All of those things are bringing me a ton of hope, so big and small.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for your call, Andre. It's funny you say that about the snow, because it is so much a thing that we all used to love it when it snowed, right? And then you hit a point where you're like, oh no, it's snow. So it's that's a good reminder. Thank you. Yeah. Let's go to Christine calling from Freeport. Hi, Christine. Go ahead. Oops, are you there, Christine? Let's see if we can try a little later going back. So how about Karen calling from Freeport? Hi, Karen.
Hi. I'm really enjoying this conversation. It's really great. And I'm someone who has worked for about 40 years in human service, working with people with disabilities and healthcare issues. And I have done hospice, and my underlying philosophy through all of that has been, just because you can't fix things doesn't mean you can't make them better. There's always something that you can do to help the person have a sense of control, a sense of dignity, a sense of comfort, the knowledge that their life has had meaning or their life will have meaning after changes when disabilities comes on. So that's been my kind of guiding principle over the years.
That's a terrific point. Thank you, Karen. And Dr. Muser, would you like to follow up on that?
I think she mentioned that the sense of control. I think when you feel out of control, that you have no ability to change a situation, that's really when mental health is challenged significantly. And so, you know, the phrase little acts of kindness comes to my mind in listening to that caller, that it's not solving the problem that matters as much as maybe making a difference for another person in that moment. To me, hope is very interpersonal in nature. It really begs for community. Yeah, really, I appreciated the comments of this caller in particular.
Great. Thank you so much, Karen. And I'll read an email here from Holzhaus saying, hoping to find inspiration from this conversation. When dealing with a mental health crisis, there is very little hope offered by the mental health system here in Maine. Any hope or help would be wonderful. And that reminds me of, actually, we did a show just last week on brain injuries. And one of our guests, Lee Glynn, is a stroke survivor, and he was describing how he went through the system and he just kept hearing doctors and therapists not giving him sort of any sense of hope. And he was getting really, really down and actually considering suicide. And one therapist simply said, you can regain some function. We might have to work really hard. Can't guarantee it, but you can. And he said that little bit of hope was everything to him, and it made him keep going, and he did regain some of that function. So yes, just that little bit makes a difference. Kenneth, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's so vitally important to find that little that little bit that helps someone along. And you know, all of the comments have been so great. You know, outcomes. I type something that says incomes, right? It's interpersonal, but it's also intrapersonal. And I think for those who are, you know, dealing with various types of struggles, you know, peace of mind is a major way of getting some comfort, you know, and that's not outcomes based per se. People don't necessarily see that externally, but that's some inside work that has to happen. And so for the writers or the callers, you know, finding those individuals that will help share some of that perspective, I think is very important to find the glimmer of hope. I mean, there's all kinds of little phrases, but a glimmer of hope goes a long, long, long way.
You're right. There's a lot of cliches, but they're good cliches out there about hope. Tell us what gives you hope. Call 1-800-399-3566. We're taking another quick break right now. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Cindy Hahn, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Our topic today is hope, why we need a sense of hope and what that really means. With me are Dr. Tom Muser with the Center for Excellence in Aging and Health at the University of New England, Reverend Brittany Longsdorf, multi-faith chaplain at Bates College, and Reverend Kenneth Lewis. He's senior pastor at Green Memorial AME Zion Church. Join our conversation. Let us know what makes you hopeful. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or tweet at MaineCalling or post to our Facebook page or to Instagram. And we'll go now to a caller. This is Warren calling from Old Town. Hi, Warren. Thanks for waiting.
Thank you for taking my call. This sure. is a great program. I'm really enjoying the topic.
I'm glad. What do you feel hopeful about?
You know, I have hope in the character of a loving God. And I've had that experience for years. I'm quadriplegic, and I have a very limited life. But I'm peaceful, and I have that hope that fills my heart.
That's wonderful to hear that sustains you. So thank you for sharing that, Warren. And let's see what our guests have to say about that. Brittany, would you like to comment on this peacefulness that he finds?
Yeah, I think you named something really important that's true for many people of many faith backgrounds, which is this belief that there is something bigger than them in the world that holds them in the difficult moments, and that is what adds so much peace and hope to your life. And it reminds me just of how wonderful it is to have that kind of relationship with whoever you and whatever you hold as sacred, and to have that kind of trust. And reminds me, earlier we were talking about kind of mental health and hope and even I think physical health and hope. And when you are having struggles in these ways, where can you find hope and cultivate hope? And I have a good friend who directs our counseling center at Bates who talks about therapy isn't the only thing that's therapeutic. There are moments when you need therapy or need something, you know, specifically for your physical and mental health, but there is also faith, and there's friendships, and there are all these other things that can be highly therapeutic for us. So I'm grateful you brought that up.
Thanks for that call. And now we have on the line Christine, back on the line hopefully now from Freeport. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a transgender cancer survivor, and yesterday we had our Transgender Day of Remembrance, where we read 297 names of people who have been murdered in the past year. And it's really difficult sometimes to find hope in a community that gets marginalized and beat about. But I'm listening with this this conversation, and I'm just amazed that one of the things that I've found through two different bouts with cancer is that, you know, one of your callers talked about Christians lighting candles and waiting for hope to come into the world or something better. And I found that when you let go of yourself and you focus on others and you step into the world to make a difference, things shift really dramatically. And it doesn't mean you don't have down times, but letting go of the importance of me and deciding and choosing to live a life despite whatever else is going on in my life, those things that are really negative don't define me, and I can choose that. So thank you for doing this this topic.
Thank you so much for all those wise words, Christine. Thanks for calling. And Ken, go ahead and follow up on that, what Christine was talking about.
You know, I think the putting me in perspective is really, Christine, that's a wonderful, wonderful approach to engaging in the world, to put me in perspective and realize that regardless of what I'm going through, I have a contribution that I can make to bring about peace, shalom, in the world. And by I get better when I help others get better as well. I have purpose. And so I think the lack or loss of purpose exacerbates hopelessness. And when I can find purpose, regardless of how minute it may be, it transcends my environment and transforms my outlook. And I think that that's, I'm hopeful because of what was just shared.
So good of you to call in, Christine. And we have so many comments from all of you. We have an email from Kim. I think of myself as a very positive and optimistic person, but live with two individuals whose natural tendency is to see the glass half empty and continuously bring up problems with society and the world, which makes it hard for me to stay optimistic. Would you have any advice on how to manage relationships like this to stay positive? This is such a universal issue. Dr. Muser, go ahead.
So the research has shown over the years that optimism and hope are similar but different. So what I'm hearing in this is judgments in the moment that obviously are upsetting to this writer because she's hearing things that sort of pull her down. And yet I think she could also make a choice to verbalize her sense of hopelessness, not to negate what the other believes, but to spin it in a different way, to think about it in a more action-oriented way for herself, as I think some of the other callers have suggested and some of our own comments have. So I think she's got a choice here. And I think making that choice may be more freeing for her in this moment, even with some of the Debbie Downer stuff that others may be saying.
Great. Okay, let's go to Tom, calling from Camden. Hi, Tom.
Hi, thank you for this great show. So I and my brother founded something called Hope Elephant. Some of your callers may remember that. But what I want to comment on is when I was about 16, I read a book called Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. And it really moved me. And if people know that, they might remember that book. And in the book, he talked about one of his patients who was contemplating suicide and called him at 1 a.m. or something and said, look, Dr. Frankl, thank you for all your help, but I think I've just had it. I'm going to commit suicide. And he stayed on the phone with them for a couple of hours. And at the end, they said, well, I guess you're right. I'm not going to do that. And so which argument that I posed was convincing to you? And I said, none of them. Just the fact that somebody was willing to stay on the phone with me and talk with me and cared enough to be there. So I wrote Viktor Frankl a letter thinking naively that I could come study with him at the age of 16. And he actually wrote back a handwritten letter, you know, explaining, I'm still alive, barely, but I can't take students, but I just appreciate your letter from some kid in the middle of nowhere. So I think the point that someone has, you know, that showing someone that you care about them enough to care about them is very meaningful.
That is such a great story. Thank you, Tom, for sharing that. And I think you've all touched upon that. Just the act, right, of caring and sharing like that is something. We have an email from Clifford. Hopelessness is so often associated with depression, that inner self-referential downward spiral. Changing your focus to the external by doing something nice for someone else works wonderfully for breaking that spiral. Repeat as necessary until your hope and faith in humanity is restored. So that's a technique. Does that sound, Tom, like a way to approach hope?
I'm seeing nods across our whole Zoom screen on that one. So yes, I mean, I think anytime that we can look past ourselves in a way that builds a sense of efficacy and connection, that's going to be helpful. Yeah, there are times too, though. I think, you know, we Brittany mentioned grief earlier, and I think actually hope and grief are somewhat synergistic. Sometimes we have to grieve a bit and let go and accept what we can't change and what's difficult to find that hope, that that there's more to it. I'll let the others respond.
Well, I'm going to jump to callers just because everyone's calling with such great points. I can't leave anyone out here. Courtney is calling from Brunswick. Go ahead, Courtney.
Hi. What gives me hope personally, I'm 22 years old, so I've kind of grew up in this like age of chaos. And what gives me hope is returning to the soil and being able to give my funds to farmers to feed myself and knowing that they are taking care of the planet. And I also work outside and in that kind of industry. So it's just overall like returning to nature and just kind of getting your hands dirty is so, so healing and so important. And I genuinely encourage anyone who can to do that because it really just puts things into perspective and it gives you that sort of empowerment that I think a lot of people could use.
Courtney, that is such a great point. I think so many people can relate to that. And Jeannie's calling from York. Hi, Jeannie. Go ahead.
Yes. Courtney just made a comment that I'm finding as an older person that I discovered in my life is, when I was growing up in the 50s and 60s, there was no education on the internet, on environment. And today, young people get that information from preschool right up through college. And as a middle-aged person, I began to understand the interconnectedness of everything on this earth, from animals to plants to the soil to everything. And it gives me hope when I see how terrific or horrific events on this earth that destroy things, nature and the interconnectedness of everything on this earth repairs and brings back what has been lost. And from that, I can take hope for the human element of this earth. And that all gives me hope. And like Courtney said, getting your hands in the dirt and feeling what is happening in that dirt and how everything works has just, it overwhelms me that I now know how our earth is working and comes back when terrible things happen. So that gives me hope for the humans that have had terrific things, horrific things happen to them, that there is hope. And there are people who can help you find hope. So I guess my big thing is that the interconnectedness of everything on this earth through nature gives me hope. And when I go outside and see that happening all around me, I know everything's going to be okay.
That's great. Thank you, Jeannie, for calling. And living in Maine, of course, we all know how important that nature is to our well-being. I'm going to try to squeeze in an email from Mark. This is a book, I believe. In Active Hope, How to Face the Mess We're In Without Going Crazy by Joanna Macy and Chris Johnstone, they contrast passive hope as a feeling or expectation about possible outcomes and active hope as a practice and progression through a spiral of four stages. These involve gratitude, honoring pain, seeing with new perspectives, and going forth together. I don't know if any of you are familiar with that book, but Reverend Lewis, do you want to comment on that?
I'm not familiar with the book, but I like the points that it articulates. That going forth together is what resonates with me. Whether it's five stages of grief or seven stages of grief or whatever it might be, that going forth together tells me that we're never in this thing alone. Whether it's friends or family, I'm struck by the prior comment about getting your hands dirty or putting your hands in the dirt, getting to the crux of the core of the matter metaphorically, and then going together. I think it's so vitally important that folks know that they are not by themselves and that they're not the only person who's ever gone through what they're going through.
So we just have a few seconds, but I wanted to hear from you, Ken. What gives you hope?
Oh, goodness. I woke up this morning.
Okay. That's a good one, actually. And Tom, how about you in a quick moment?
I have three children, and they're very unique, and hopeful worldviews really give me hope.
That's beautiful. Brittany, one more word on that?
Just hearing that word of togetherness, it reminds me of how we started this conversation about how hope is this muscle, this ingrained human thing that we all practice every day in small and big ways. And I think hope is maybe one of the most shared human experiences. Nice to be reminded that we don't have to do it alone.
Well, on that hopeful note, thank you all for joining us today. Reverend Dr. Brittany Longsdorf with Bates College, Reverend Kenneth Lewis with the Green Memorial AME Zion Church, and Tom Muser with UNE. Today's sound engineer was George Thomas. Tomorrow on the program, we're talking about music and activism. I'm Cindy Hahn, and this is Maine Calling.